Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker tonight, Mike from San Diego.
I got a wave in the back row there. One more time. Come on. Right on. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a blackout drunk. Any other blackout drunks in the room? Right on. You guys are my people. Okay, so I met the requirements. I wore a suit and tie. Now I'm going to take the jacket off. It's hot in here. Someone's glasses. Whoa. Okay, so I'm a blackout drunk, and before I get started, I want to say, Larry, thank you very much for asking me to come do this. Lori did an awesome 10-minute job. Lori's my wife. We have an AA household, and I love her very much. And, Larry actually got to marry us. So it was one of those deals where it's like we're sitting around discussing, well, who are we going to have marry us? And, I had thought about Larry, and she had thought about Larry, and we started talking about it. And so, well, why don't we just get Larry to do it? And so we asked him to do it, and he said he would. He did an awesome job, and it was one of those moments that, you get to remember for the rest of your life, and I'm very grateful for that. I never got to thank him publicly for that, and I really want to thank you. That was awesome. Okay. I would like to thank everyone that showed up tonight just to hear me speak. Congratulations to those that that took tokens for the birthdays. Melissa, congratulations on 90 days. My sobriety date is January 31st, 1992. I got sober sometime during the month of January of 1992. I don't know the exact date that I took my last drink, but I do know that it was sometime during the month of January of 1992. So I think I don't need to say that anymore. I think I beat that one to death. What do I want to talk about? I'm going to tell you some stories. Basically about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'm going to go into a little bit of pre-drinking, then I'm going to go into drinking, and then I'm going to go into insanity, and then I'm going to go into insanity and recovery, and then I'm going to go into recovery. And hopefully I'm going to get all that done in 45 minutes. What time do I need to stop anyways? 10 till? Damn, I got an hour. No. Like a half hour, 40 minutes. Okay, so I grew up in a small little town in White City, Oregon, called White City, Oregon. It's not. I'm glad that's funny. A small town called White City, Oregon, and where I grew up, I'm going to give you what my definition of an alcoholic was when I was a kid. When I was a kid growing up, I'm an identical twin, me and my twin brother, we used to go down this bike path, and we'd collect beer bottles and beer cans. And we'd collect them from the winos along this bike path. And it was a one-stoplight town, and the stoplight was right on the freeway, and Highway 62. And that was the only stoplight that we had in town for a long time. And me and my brother would go down, and we'd collect all these beer bottles and beer cans, and we'd take them up to the grocery store and we'd cash them in. And how we got all these beer bottles and beer cans and how this bike path came into play was there was a Veterans Administration domiciliary that had a rehab for drug addicts and alcoholics. And this rehab, what happened was the winos kept on crossing the freeway to go to the nearest store, and they were getting hit by trucks, by logging trucks and by cars and stuff. So the county put in this bike path along the freeway that was like a mile away from the nearest place that would sell liquor. And they would get their paychecks and walk up, get their beer bottles and wine and everything else, and then pass out along the bike path on the way back. And that's how me and my brother would collect our money for gum and candy and stuff. So what I viewed as an alcoholic was the wino laying on the bench, passed out, and that's what I thought an alcoholic was prior to coming to the Room of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first came to the Room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not think I was an alcoholic. How many people thought they were alcoholics the first time they came to the Room of Alcoholics Anonymous? Liars. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I didn't. I did not think that I was an alcoholic. Everybody that I hung around with and everybody I drank with drank exactly the same way I did. And what's interesting about that is that when I ended up getting sober, after I'd come to my first meeting of AA, I was working base police, and I went back to the base, and I told this guy, he's like, yeah, I went to this meeting of AA, and he's like, did they say, hi, Mike? And I got real embarrassed, and it was like, wow, you know, and I felt like about this tall. I didn't really know how to deal with that. I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. When I was about 8 years old, I guess, it was about eight, my twin brother and my sister were walking back from the store, and we grew up in this development that was, it was still under construction a lot of the time, and these people still hadn't put their fences up, and they were walking back from the store, and this lady had a Great Dane, and she didn't have it chained up or anything, and it got loose, and it ran out, and it attacked my sister, and, you know, mauled her, basically, and gave her a whole bunch of stitches in her ear, and and when that happened, my dad ended up going up to the house later on that day, and he told the lady, "Is that the dog was there? Is that the dog that bit my daughter?" And the lady goes, "Well, I don't know if she bit your daughter or not, but she bit some girl today." And he goes, "Well, you put that dog to sleep, or I'm going to put that dog to sleep." And he meant it. He had his gun and he was ready to shoot the dog. And what that told me was that my parents loved me very much and loved my family very much, and my dad was willing to do anything to protect us. But what it also did was it instilled a fear in me that when I started drinking, I started hanging around this crowd, and, you know, my first time I got drunk, I was 13 years old. Like I said, we used to live near this old army base, And there was an old theater, and we used to go out to the old theater. And the first time I ever did anything that was illegal, I guess, was my friend Rocky had some pot, and he asked me if I wanted to smoke some pot. And I was like, well, I don't know what that is, you know, and I'm 13 years old, I don't know anything about it. And he goes, well, you get high. And I was like, well, okay, you know, I don't know what getting high is, but okay. And so he gave me, you know, a couple of hits off this pipe, and nothing happened. I don't remember anything happened. But I started hanging around with Rocky because Rocky was the cool kid. He was doing stuff that you're not supposed to be doing and everything else. And eventually what happened was I ended up staying the night at Rocky's house. Me and Rocky snuck out of his house and went over to my friend Brent's house. And Brent had a two-liter bottle full of vodka. And we drank that vodka and we got drunk. And I blacked out, and I passed out, and I puked, and I did everything that I did. I don't need to tell you any more about my drinking. That's what happened, you know. Pretty much happened every time I drank. I blacked out, I passed out, and I puked. Occasionally, I got laid. occasionally. there was a solution to that. That was called getting married. I did that plenty of times, too. Then you don't have to worry about getting laid. You was always going to get laid. But that's a different story. You know, the insanity, I'm going to tell you some insane stuff. The insanity of me was that my first marriage, I'm standing at the altar, and I'm like this, and she comes walking up the aisle, and I'm just like, this is never going to work. And I should have known. I mean, should have just left. I mean, but... I mean, I had invited all my family. They were there. I mean, everybody was there, right? And it was like, okay, we'll try it. I know it's not going to work. So I got married, and it didn't work, you know? Consequently, my second marriage is the same way. She's walking down the aisle, and it's like, this is never going to work. And it didn't work. But my second marriage, that's a different story. Anyways, I started hanging around with a bunch of guys that was drinking and partying. And I mean, and that's the way I drank. I drank to get high. I drank to get a buzz. I didn't do any social drinking. And so anyways, we started hanging around, and they took me over to this guy's house. His name was Jim. And Jim got me alone one day, and he molested me. And I never told a soul about that. Never. Never told anyone about that. Never told anyone about that until I came to Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean, it devastated me. You know, it totally changed who I am on a emotional, psychological, physical level. I mean, it's like for a long time, it was like it was a dream that it was a nightmare that took place that I wanted to forget. And booze allowed me to forget about it sometimes. Sometimes I would drink and it would bring it out, all the aggression that I felt. And the saddest part about that was that, remember that story I told you about my sister getting mauled by the dog? I never told my parents. And the reason I never told my dad was because I was afraid that that my dad would go down and shoot this guy and I would lose him as a father. And I didn't want that. You know, and it's heavy shit for a 13-year-old kid to be carrying around. And that's what I was. I was a 13-year-old kid. But I had the mind frame for the rest of my life was like, that's never going to happen again. If I ever get put in that situation again, I'm going to die or they're going to die. One of the two. It's never going to happen again. And it put me in an attack or be attacked mind frame for the rest of my life until I got to the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when I was out there drinking and I was out there partying and running amok, it was like, you know, if you snuck up on me or if I got too aggressive and started reliving that past, it was like it would all come out and I would get really aggressive. I mean, just I would get really aggressive when I was drinking. And consequently, when I got sober and I didn't have the booze in me, I would get really aggressive because I hadn't worked the steps. It took me a long time to work the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous because I had all this anger and rage inside of me from what had taken place that I had tried to drown out with booze. And when I finally, you know, ended up working the steps, I was a wreck. I mean, I was at the point of, I was 5 years dry, couldn't call it sober. I was like dry. I was so dry, if you struck a match, I would have exploded in flames. But I was 5 years dry. I had three choices. One was work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Two was blow my brains out. And three was drink. And I asked my sponsor, picked up the phone and called him and said, Al, would you sponsor me and take me through the steps? And he said, yeah. And he said, Michael, he likes to call me Michael. Michael, why don't we get back to basics and start doing what you did, you know, in your early recovery, and come on over to my house and we'll sit down and we'll go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I did. But to get to that point, to where I was ready to work the steps, you know, I had created a lot of wreckage in recovery. The very first meeting I went to in Alcoholics Anonymous was a bonfire meeting down at Shelter Island. And the only thing I related to at the very first meeting was, you guys read it here tonight, was more about alcoholism. That was it. That was the only thing I related to. My very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, when you guys read more about alcoholism. Taking a drink, not taking a drink. Swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath. Taking more physical exercise. Reading inspirational books. That was the only thing I related to. Who related to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous the first day you came to meeting? Right on. Because I didn't. Who was able to understand this book the first time they read it? I couldn't. This is my very first book that I got in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would try and read it, and I would get frustrated and angry and pissed off, and I'd throw it across the room and pick it up and try and decipher what it was saying again, and I just couldn't do it. I mean, when you read the first page of Bill's story, it is just amazing. War fever ran high in the New England town from which we knew young officers from Plattsburgh were assigned. It's like, what the hell is he talking about? What's he talking about? I know today what he's talking about. When I first picked up the book, it's like, by the time I got done with the paragraphs, it's like, what the hell? Because what Bill's talking about in here is he's talking about he was a sophomore going to a military college that he had just got activated into World War One, and I mean, it was just like, and I didn't understand any of that. Nothing. I didn't comprehend this book. And, you know, and later on, I would get so frustrated when I'd be reading a story or reading a paragraph in here or reading a page out of here, and I'd start reading, and I'd get through a paragraph, and I'd forget what the paragraph was talking about at the beginning. It'd be like, what's he talking about? And I just like, I can't understand this. And I throw it across the room again, and I get upset. I couldn't hardly read when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics. And I couldn't read publicly. I couldn't stand up in the front of the microphone and read. Couldn't do that. I went back to my high school, and I got my transcripts from my high school when I graduated. And it was like, my high school transcripts was like 1.83 GPA. I mean, it was like I was... I barely passed high school. I mean, it was like I was an idiot. I was a moron. I was a pothead that couldn't concentrate on anything. And it was just like, what do you want to do? I want to get high, dude. That was me. I mean, that was me. How I made it to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was in November of 1991. I was at a bar. I was drinking out of a bar in Imperial Beach called Ye Olde Plank Inn. Anybody ever drink there? Great place, huh? You want to go to the bathroom, you got to walk outside the bar, go into this covered patio, and it smells like puke and urine and everything else. And you got to go out the patio, underneath the covered patio, to go to the restroom. And then you got to go, you know, and then you go back in and drink again. And I was drinking down there in November of 91, went into another blackout. During that night, I had driven my car to the bar, and it was a classy car. I had classy cars. I used to collect cars, pay a couple $100 for them, have $500 or $600, $200 or $300 cars or motorcycles, and... Because when one broke, you know, you had another one that you could, you know, drive to get you to the bar, to work, or whatever. And, I mean, it was bad. I had this one car. It was a 1977 Grand Prix. And the guy that I got it from he worked base police and was an alcoholic just like I was. He had wrecked it, and the whole front grill was just demolished. And... my solution was, well, that's okay. Who needs a grill? I bought a piece of plywood. I cut out vents. I cut out vents for the radiator to get air through so it would cool. And then I cut out little squares where I could mount the headlights. And then I cut out squares where you could mount the turn signals. And then I painted half of it black, and then the center of it, I painted orange. I don't know why, but I just did. And I drove that car. I drove that car all over San Diego. And I had a bunch of cars like that. I had a 1977 Yamaha motorcycle, and it was just, you know, one thing after another. It was crazy. Anyways, that night I drove that car to the bar, and the next day I wake up and I've got a slice on my hand. I still got the scar from it. I used to wear a black leather vest, a big long knife, and that's, you know, that was my persona. Stay the fuck away from me. And sometime during the night I got really, I blacked out. I was tipping one back, blacked out, and apparently a guy was picking on a dog outside the bar, and Captain Justice had to step out and defend the rights of this dog. And he shoved me. I landed on my head, got knocked out. When I came to, I pulled that knife and was chasing around the parking lot. I was going to cut him up. And when I woke up the next morning and people told me what I had done, I was like, that's it. I'm never drinking again. And I meant it. I meant it with every fiber of my being. I'm never drinking again. Now, I had come out of blackouts many, many times swearing off, I am never going to drink again. I mean, how many people have swore off, never going to drink again, coming out of a blackout, hurling everyone, oh, I'm never going to do this again. Oh, it's so bad. Oh, you know? The porcelain goddess will make you do all kinds of things. It's like, I'm never going to do this again. Oh, your stomach's sore for the next 3 days from hurling or the dry heaves. And I swore I was never going to drink again. I'm not drinking again. And 3 days later, I had a beer in my hand. I'd never been to Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyways, I like to dance. And I met this lady that brought me to AA in a bar. She was a drug and alcohol abuse counselor. She had 6 years of sobriety, and she picked me up in a bar and took me to my first meeting. And 90 days later, she married me. Who do you think's sicker? I mean, I'm a newcomer. I mean, I got less than, I don't know nothing about nothing. I'm a 13-year-old in a 26-year-old body, you know? And I am, like, messed up. My upstairs was just, like, fried. And I asked her, and she said she would. And I'm standing at the aisle saying, this is never going to work. And I'm glad I didn't bring my family to that wedding. That was like one of those elope things, you know. We went up to the hitching post up in, it was called the Hitching Post Wedding Chapel, and it was up in San Bernardino, up at, I think up at Big Bear. And that's where we got married. And it's never going to work. And we spent the next 30 days fighting. But what I got to tell you is, that lady's the angel that God sent me to help me get sober. And I firmly believe that. I believe that with every fiber of my being right now. And I firmly believe that she is the person that God sent me to help me get sober. And, you know, one of the bad things about being in a relationship in early recovery with someone that's got more time than you is that they'll throw out, like, little innuendos. Like, you know, if you don't work your steps, you're going to get drunk. And then, you know, if you got an ego like mine, it's like, well, I ain't working the steps, and I ain't drinking either. You know, and then I get a resentment because it's like, do a four-step. I don't have to do a four-step. The only requirement for membership is desire to stop drinking. I have that, you know. And man, I mean, it's like, you know, there's nothing worse than reading the short form of the 12 steps and going to a meeting and people saying, you know, why don't you just work the steps? It'll help change your life. I don't have to work the steps. The only requirement for members is not desire not drinking, you know. And so when everything that I tried quit working in recovery, I went to my sponsor, and I'd been calling my sponsor. He wasn't my sponsor. He was just, I was a member of Easy Desert Riders. I'd been going to Easy Desert Riders since I was a year sober. And I would call Al every Sunday morning when I was in town at 5:30. Al, are you going to the meeting? He'd say, yes, Michael, I am. How was your week? And we'd start talking. And that's how I developed a relationship with my sponsor. It wasn't a formal requisition to be my sponsor or anything like that. And so when he never shut the door on me, he never said, do the steps or die. He never said anything. He just said, hi, Michael, how are you? And he would just talk to me, you know. And it was important that, you know, that someone just talked to me because I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know where I was at. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything about recovery, you know. And it was really important that someone stick their hand out and say, it's okay, you're right where you need to be. And that's basically what I would do, was every Sunday morning when I would call him, say, you're right where you need to be. And so when my ass was falling off and I was ready to blow my brains out or drink, I knew where I could go to call him. And I called him. And I asked him to sponsor me. And he took on one of the single most important things I think there is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is saying, yes, I will help you change your life as long as you're willing to do the work. And if you no longer want to live the way you're living, there's a lot of work involved. There's a lot of work. For me, there was a lot of work in changing what was going on up here in my head. And the steps were key to that. There was a whole bunch of other stuff that was vital to it as well, called action in recovery. You know, I went to a meeting almost every day in my first 90 days of recovery. And then, I mean, I did a whole bunch of things they say not to do in your first year of recovery. They say, don't get in a relationship, don't make any major changes, don't do this, don't do that, blah, 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 blah. And they're saying that because they're afraid that, you know, if you put too much into your life that you might take a drink. What happened with me was I reenlisted in the Navy when I was 30 days sober. When I was 90 days sober, I got married. When I was 4 months sober, I went on my first sober deployment. And I didn't know how I was going to stay sober. I had no clue what my recovery was going to be like. And so I went to the drug and alcohol abuse counselor on the ship, and I said, you know, I'm new in recovery, and I want to know if we're going to have meetings on board the ship. And he goes, yes, we are, as a matter of fact. You'll be the secretary. Call me and let me know what time you want the meetings to be. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, you'll be the secretary. Just call me. Let me know what time you want to have the meeting, and we'll have it passed over the 1MC, which is the announcement system on the ship. And so I called him. I said, how about 8 o'clock? And it was our first deployment. My first sober deployment. It wasn't the ship's first deployment, but it was my first sober deployment, and it was our first day at sea, and we just brought on like 1,500 Marines, and there was like 3,000 people on the ship. And so I called the drug and alcohol abuse counselor and said, yeah, let's have a meeting at 8 o'clock. And he goes, not a problem. So they passed the word, and he goes, where do you want to have it? I said, on the mess decks. He said, okay. I go. So they passed the word, and the mess decks is the most non-anonymous place there is on the ship. It's like, you know, it's like that's where everybody goes for everything. It's like where you eat 3 times a day, 4 times a day, 5 times a day, however many times a day they're serving a meal, and where everybody converges. Everybody's walking through there all the time. And so at 8 o'clock, they pass the word. There's now an AA meeting on the mess decks. And the miraculous thing was that 3 other people showed up. And one guy had 30 days sober, you know, less time than I did. And I had, you know, I barely had 4 months sober. And, you know, we sat there and we discussed it for a while. And it's like, well, this is probably isn't the best spot to have a meeting. So I was in charge of the storeroom. So I went to my division officer and asked him if we could use the storeroom. He said, yeah. So we went down to the storerooms and we started having a meeting in the storeroom. But every night at 8 o'clock, we'd have someone sit up there on the mess decks in case someone wanted to come to the meeting. And that was action and recovery. That was me doing what I did not know what to do. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how I was going to stay sober. I just knew I didn't want to drink. And that was my first sober deployment. And out of that sober deployment, at one time we had like 18 people at the meeting. And out of that meeting, we had 4 people that stayed sober the entire time. Me, a guy by the name of Chuck, another guy by the name of Mike, and another guy by the name of Tim. And Tim rides with Keith and his bros. And I gave Tim a 5-year token when we was on the deployment. And I didn't have no tokens. We had a big book. That's what we had for our recovery. You know, 12 and 12, 12 and 12, what's that? You know, it was like, I didn't even know about a 12 and 12, you know. We had the big book, and we'd sit down and we'd read the book, and, you know, we'd complain about our chief and our division officer and what was going wrong with the ship, you know, but we had a place to go and vent. And when we hit the beach, we had a place. You know, we'd hang out and we'd try and find meetings together so that we can do sobriety. We didn't want to be alone. And And that's how I was able to stay sober in my first deployment. And out of that, I've gained a lot of friends in recovery as a result of that. Been to meetings all over the world as a result of staying in the Navy and staying sober. I was 9 years so I was 9 years in the military when I first got sober, and I retired in 2003 after 11 years sober. I got to do like 5 sober deployments, and I got to go to meetings all over the world: Panama, Singapore, Thailand, Hong Kong, Jebel Ali, Iraqi desert. I mean, you name it, I've been there, and they've got recovery there. And it's amazing to go to recovery overseas. It's different. And it's different in the form of completely different than Southern California. I mean, I'm not knocking Southern California AA. I love Southern California AA. But sometimes we get so wrapped up in our lives and ourselves and what else is going on, that when a newcomer or a new person from out of town comes into the meeting, it's like, hi, here's my phone number, call me, got to go, bye. You know, overseas, it's like, yeah, I'm new in town, I'm with the Navy. And they're like, really? Well, come on, come with us after the meeting, and they'll take you to their favorite place to eat. And then after that, they'll give you a ride back to the ship, and they'll give you a phone. And they say, if you call me tomorrow, I'll come right back here, and I'll pick you up, and we'll take you to another meeting. And that's what they do overseas. I mean, that was my experience. I don't know that that doesn't happen here, but that was my experience overseas. And, you know, me being so caught up in Southern California AA and my life and this and that and everything else, I forget about that sometimes. You know, it's like, it's about being of service to our fellow man. That's what this program's about. How do you get out of yourself? You be of service to somebody else. After I did my fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, he had me pick up the 12 and 12. And he said, Mike, I want you to read chapter 6 out of the 12 and 12 for the next 30 days. And then when you get done with that, I want you to read chapter 7 out of the 12 and 12 for the next 30 days. And then we'll sit down and we'll go over it. And that's what we did. And when we sat down and went over, he said, Mike, in the 12 steps, steps 6 and 7 are the forgotten steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the big book, it's 2 paragraphs. Boom, psh, gone. You know? And most people just get through and they blow through it and they go on to make their amends. And when they're making their amends, they have no idea what they're making their amends for, because they don't know what their character defects are. They don't know what's going on inside of them, and they don't know how they're reacting to life. It's about change. And the change takes place in 6 and 7. It's about crushing our ego. It's about getting out of ego and more into God and more into service with our fellow man. And he made me write down the 7 deadly sins, put them in my pocket, carry them with me. Whenever I went out into the world, if I started getting upset about something, frustrated about something, pull it out, look at it, what's going on with me? What is going on with me? Got a little bit of pride going on? How about a little bit of ego, fear, lust? What's going on with you? Take a look at it. Because that's where the change takes place. If you're willing to look at yourself when you're in the middle of it, then next time you probably won't react to it. And the next time you'll be able to say, oh, wow, I don't do that no more. And so, you know, the change that took place for me in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the major change was in the 6 and 7 steps of AA. You know, I ended up making amends to my ex-wife. Me and Al went over my lists. I had a list of 13 items that I need to make amends for. I flew back to Massachusetts, took her to dinner, sat down with her, started going through the list. It was a list that I was comfortable with, that I had looked at, that I knew everything about. And when I was done, she was like, well, what about this and this and this and this and this? You know? And I was like, you're right. You're right. That's a part of what took place in our life. And, you know, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here for the core issues. These are the core issues. This is what you're dealing with is the action as a result of me not being able to deal with this. And so I'm here to deal with this so that in the future I don't have to behave that way, not to you or anybody else. And it was important. It was huge. In May of 1999, I had about three sponsees, and we decided we was going to go over to Laughlin to the Tri-State Roundup for a convention. And we went over there. We was all sharing one room, and we was, you know, just hanging out. And I went to a meeting, and when I was done with the meeting, Steve and a friend of mine by the name of Lloyd. Sorry. That's the clock saying it's time. Gotta go. See ya. Friend of ours, friend of mine, Steve and Lloyd, introduced me to my wife. It was 11 years ago. And I didn't know she was going to be my wife. I didn't know what was going on. I was just like, hey, Mike, this is Lori. Lori, this is Mike. You know, and we met, and I was going to go dancing, and she went and got her shoes, and we went dancing. And we danced the whole night in the Loser's Lounge. Now, think about that. Two alcoholics dancing in the Loser's Lounge. Society would say, perfect. but it was perfect. We got to know each other, and we spent the last 11 years together doing life. And, you know, last time I spoke, I failed to mention that, and I got reamed for it. So, not by you, by Corinne. So I wanted to make sure I got that in there. You know, Larry ended up marrying us. I mean, we spent the last 11 years together, and it's been awesome. We met when I was 33, and we didn't get married until we were 40. And we're both the same age. She's like 6 months younger than I am. And, you know, I proposed to her when, 37? We'd been together about 4 years, and I proposed to her. And I had just come back from another deployment. And it was right, I proposed to her on 9/11. We was out in the middle of the Arizona desert, and we didn't know what was going on. We got back to the hotel that night, and I was on leave. The ship had a recall, and I was out of contact. They couldn't contact me. And so when I got back, I had to call them and let them know I was okay and I was alive and everything else. But I proposed to her on 9/11, and we got married August 5th. of 2006, and you know, I have an AA household. You know, my wife and I are in recovery. We do meetings. We have meetings in our house. We meet with our sponsees in our house. We have everything that, you know. It's like when I was new in recovery, and people would talk about it up here at the podium. I'd be like, you know, you're like, you know, people would be like, you know, I have meetings at my house. My wife has meetings. You know, I'd be like, yeah, right. Blow your brains out, you know. I mean, I was so angry in my early recovery that it was just like I was obstinate. I was I just wanted to keep you away from me. I didn't want to get close, and that's not what my life is like today. You know, as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've allowed some people to get close. I still keep a lot of people at a distance. I allow very, very few people to get inside the inner core. And it has nothing to do with you guys. Nothing at all. I mean, I'll do anything for you. But to get deep inside, not many people make it there, you know? And it's sad. It's really sad. I would love to say that everybody here is my best friend, but that's not true. You know, and it has a lot to do with recovery and a lot to do with, you know, we're dealing with the cesspool of society here. Okay. It's like we're not dealing with everybody in these rooms is not well and healthy. We're not. There's some really sick people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't mean I don't allow myself to step out of myself and help you out. Right. There was a guy that was very, very close to me. I mean, he was almost my sponsor. 37 years old, he was molesting his granddaughter. He's in prison right now. Deeply affected me. You know, huge. You know, he was watching my daughter. I don't know whether I cannot factually prove that it took place with him and my daughter or not, but I mean, it affects me. You know, the 12 steps is about being of service and helping other people and trying not to harm people. That's what this program's about. It's about changing our behavior and changing what we're doing and trying to be of service to our fellow man. And the man, I mean, he was a deep part of my life. And when that happened, it was just like, whew, everybody back. Don't get close to me. Stay away from me. And, you know, I've been allowing people to come back into my life slowly, you know. But it deeply affected me. I have a God today that I didn't have when I first got sober. When I first got sober, I didn't want a God, okay? I have a God that I can do business with today as a result of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as a result of intense work with a sponsor, and as a result of doing a lot of research and reading. I could not, I mean, I've got a sponsee that says, why do I always get sponsors that have an agnostic temperament, you know? And that's me, you know, I believe in God, but I can't believe in some of the religions of the world. And so therefore, I'm of an agnostic temperament, I guess. But I believe in God. And I didn't believe in God when I got here. I was ignorant to a lot of things. And I'm not that way today. My last deployment was in 2003. I went to the Arabian Gulf for Operation Iraqi Freedom. I was on the aircraft carrier of the USS Constellation. And while I was out there, I was doing what some arrogant old-timer in AA told me to do a long time ago that I never did, right? He said, why don't you try and find out how many times it says we and how many times it says I in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I was out there, I took this book, which is the 12 and 12 pocket edition, and I took this book, which is the big book pocket edition. And every time I found the word we, I would circle it. And when I got to the bottom of the page, I would count how many times it said it, and I would write it on the bottom of the page. And when I got to the end of the paragraph, I would go back and count it up on each page. And so far, to the best of my knowledge, the big book says we 1,070 times. That's to the best of my knowledge. There might be one or two in there I missed. And the 12 and 12 says we 1,317 times. Now, what I can tell you about that is that if this is a program based on I would be here alone by myself. But it's not a program based on I. It's a program based on we. And we get to stay sober together. We get to help each other stay sober. We get to help each other change our lives. And if it wasn't for the we in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here. Thank you for letting me share.